Our next presenter is Joe Murphy. Joe? Peg, let me get that microphone.
Yes, sir.
You turned it off already?
Joe's presentation is on the Gulf Coast impacts from inland mining. Joe is a Gulf-wide conservation and advocacy, Gulf Coast Restoration Network is a Gulf-wide conservation and advocacy organization that works in all five Gulf Coast states to protect and preserve the human and natural communities of the Gulf of Mexico. Joe is a native of Florida who grew up on the Gulf Coast of Florida and now lives in Hernando County. Joe?
Thank you very much.
About a half hour.
Okay, no problem. Well, first of all, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I had a little computer issue this morning, so I don't have a PowerPoint presentation. If y'all ever want to come to Burksville, I'm more than happy to show you my PowerPoint presentation or some point in the future. It was a great one, too. I was really excited about it, but it's locked in my computer somewhere, and it's going to take somebody smarter than me to get it out. So technology is not my forte, but I do want to talk to y'all about some very important issues related to mining and the impacts of mining on coastal ecosystems. And that, to tell you just a little bit, again, about the Gulf Restoration Network, we're a Gulf-wide nonprofit conservation advocacy group. Our mission is to protect and preserve the human and natural communities of the Gulf of Mexico. And we're one of the only organizations in the Gulf region that focuses pretty much primarily on the entire Gulf. So we work in all five Gulf coastal states. We opened an office here in Florida last year, and I work on issues basically ranging from Pensacola to Key West. Most of the work that I do focuses on the area from Tampa to Apalachicola, but we're very concerned about mining issues across Florida, whether it's phosphate mining or sand mining or lime rock mining, aggregate issues. And the reason we're so concerned about mining issues is because of the impact they do have on coastal systems, and we'll talk more about that. I want to thank you guys for being here today. I mean, not only do I appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak, but, you know, it's a Saturday morning, and for some people, they came very far. This speaks to how important these issues are. This speaks to how strongly people feel about these things, and it speaks to how critical the times in which we live in Florida really are. You can't separate some of these mining issues from other things that are happening in the state from an environmental perspective or other ecological issues. And I think when you start thinking about some of the interconnections, it becomes even more daunting. Now, in times of great crisis and in times of great contention, there is great opportunity. So I think that in some ways, these are the bright line issues that are going to move this state forward in an environmental perspective. These are the bright line issues where we have discussions and we do organizing and we do advocacy and we do outreach and we win on some of these. Now, these are the sort of debates that are going to move this state forward if and when we win. And I think it'll be when we win, hopefully, in most of these cases. I wanted to just sort of raise a couple big picture questions and issues and then talk at a much more specific level about mining issues related to coastal ecosystems. But from a big picture perspective, and I'm going to ask you guys a question. Does anybody here know what Florida's population was in 1900? Take a wild guess. Florida's population in 1900.
1 million.
Okay, yes, I see it. 500,000 people. In 1900, Florida's population was 500,000 people. Florida was the least populated state in the American South. It was the backwater of the American South. Fewer people than Arkansas, South Carolina, West Virginia. You know, we were the backwoods in 1900. The University of Florida, late last year, estimated Florida's population at that time was 18.6 million people. So think about that. In the course of 100 years, a little more than 100 years, Florida's population goes from 500,000 to 18.5 million people. Think about all the issues sort of therein. But the reason I bring that up is what may have been somewhat sustainable, what may have been an industry whose impacts could have been absorbed by natural systems or human communities, when we have 500,000 people or a million people or 2 million people, that's very different than now in Florida when we have 18.5 million people. And I think it's an important thing to think about, that we need to think about industries that were part of Florida's past and ask some tough questions as to whether or not it's appropriate for them to be part of Florida's future. The second thing along those lines is when you think about some of the big industries in Florida, whether it's agriculture or tourism, it's an interesting question to ask when these industries are sort of at cross purposes. I would argue that a lot of the coastal impacts from mining degrade our recreational and commercial fisheries, degrade our coastal communities in terms of quality of life, and directly threaten big portions of our tourist economy. Now, you start to do some math and you start to look at some of the numbers, and we'll talk more about that later, there's a lot of money in Florida in tourism. Now, I'm not thrilled about tourism in some ways, you know, and I'm not going to Disney World anytime soon personally, but on the other hand, a lot of people come to Florida to see wild and natural Florida. A lot of people come to Florida to fish. A lot of people come to Florida to eat seafood. And if there's an industry that's threatening that sustainable, long-term economic health of our tourism industry, we need to ask some tough questions. We also, and I include the Gulf Restoration Network in this, need to do a better job cultivating powerful political allies in the tourism industry and using them sometimes to our advantage and for our assistance when we're talking about reforming or stopping mining projects. It's sort of an interesting carryover, and I won't belabor this too much, but you know, we have four people on the Florida cabinet: the governor, our attorney general, our CFO or chief financial officer, and the secretary of agriculture. Now, that's an interesting thing. Agriculture is a big industry in Florida, but if you looked at the raw numbers, we really need to have a secretary of tourism or some sort of secretary of commerce. And it's always interesting to think about if the tourism industry was represented in Tallahassee on that cabinet, you know, what would that person say? Would that person be an advocate for ecotourism? It's sort of a thought that I was raised. The other thing that I think that's really important for us in our public messaging when we're talking about these issues is to remind folks that, and I don't want to simplify this too much, but in a way it's true, we're talking about in some cases fish versus fertilizer. When we talk about local fertilizer ordinances in Florida that are designed to reduce nutrient pollution into communities and estuaries, when we talk about the impacts of tremendously, you know, large industries that ultimately are part of the fertilizer production process, if the downstream end result of those industries or of the use of fertilizer on a widespread basis is degraded estuaries and reduced fisheries and fewer experiences for fishermen, then it's fair to say we're talking about fish versus fertilizer. And the reason I say that is there's a lot of people in Florida who care about fish. There's over 1 million people in the state of Florida who have a recreational fishing license. That's 1 million people who ponied up the money to have a license to fish in Florida's waters. The number of people who fish in Florida's waters on an annual basis goes up every year. Millions of people come from across the entire country. This is the fishing capital of the United States, and yet the mining industry in many cases poses a direct threat to that industry and those ecosystems that they're dependent on. I just wanted to ask sort of one other question, kind of broad question, and then get into the presentation a little more specifically, and that is, I'm an advocate and a conservationist, but I'm really intrigued by Florida in a broader perspective, Florida's history, Florida's culture, you know, where we were as a state, where we're going as a state. You know, it's hard to separate out a lot of these things into neat little boxes. What happens to Florida when we fundamentally change the landscape in perpetuity? What happens to the culture of Florida? Can you change a landscape that fundamentally over the course of, you know, when you're talking about changing it for multiple generations, beyond multiple generations, if you do that, what happens to the culture of the people who have lived there for a long, long time? Can the culture remain the same if the landscape is gone? I work for a group that spends a lot of time working on issues in coastal Louisiana, trying to protect the remaining wetlands in coastal Louisiana. We're losing, you know, 35 to 50 square miles of coastal Louisiana every single year. It's a pretty tough thing to try to reverse, but one direct impact is that the human communities there are forever altered. Cultures are forever lost. And when you're talking about some of the impacts from mining that you've mentioned this morning or that we'll hear about this afternoon, we're talking about the same sort of fundamental long-term changes to the landscape. What happens to the people and the culture, and how do we ensure that our grandchildren will know the Florida that we know now or that our grandparents knew? The last thing I just wanted to sort of raise in that regard is that mining in and of itself is a very important issue, but more and more we're starting to see those big picture connections, and it needs to lead us to ask some of those more big picture questions. For instance, how many of the calculations in terms of permitting that are being done now factor in climate change and sea level rise? And the reason I ask that is when you're talking about reducing downstream flow of a river into an estuary, number one, you know, you're talking about having direct impacts to the quality of that estuary. Now, that presupposes that water body that you're reducing that flow from isn't also going to at some point become a point where we're going to stick a big straw in and pump water across the state for some purpose. And if you think that's not happening, then I invite you to come to Northeast Florida and spend some time with the folks up there who are fighting over the St. John's River, because it's happening and it's coming to every corner of the state. So number one, we've got these rivers that we're already going to reduce flow through or from as a result of some of these mining impacts. then you're going to pull more water out potentially as population grows. And then at the end of the day, and this is the unfortunate truth in coastal Florida, our coastlines are going to be forever altered as well by sea level rise and by climate change. What happens when you move major sections of what was the Gulf of Mexico inland into these systems without freshwater flow coming down at the rate that it used to? The reason I ask that is I think that somebody mentioned earlier, you know, sort of the difference between permitting and regulatory agencies. And I think that's, you know, some ways that's an interesting semantical question, but the real world impact is that, you know, we need to make sure that when these agencies are looking at these issues and making these decisions, they're taking a much broader perspective. It's almost like, I think sometimes when these agencies make their regulatory decisions, it's like they take a piece of black felt and they lay it over a map and they cut out a little square in the middle and they pretend that little square is the whole world and that's what they're looking at. So we need to rip that felt off and say, not only are we looking at a bigger picture, but we're thinking about an entire ecosystem here with the Gulf of Mexico. And it's dying right now, a death by a thousand cuts. And every one of these proposed projects that impacts flow or water quality into the Gulf of Mexico is another one of those thousand cuts. The last quick thing I just wanted to mention, and I'm going to say this now and I'm going to say this at the end, there is one person that I think that we need to focus a lot more time and energy on in terms of pushing them for more public positions and pushing them for more public action, and that's Governor Crist. When you think about it, Governor Crist appoints the folks on the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. He's one of four votes on the Florida Cabinet, and if there's a vote that goes 2-2, the governor wins. He appoints the folks to the Water Management District. He appoints the Secretary of DCA and DEP. We need to make sure that we're on a more regular basis, and I say we, I mean us too, getting this information in front of the governor's office and getting this information in front of the governor in a way where we're very publicly challenging him to step up and do the right thing and let us know what is his position on all these issues. What's his position about fundamentally altering the hydrologic patterns and cycles of major sections of Florida for an industry that is at cross purposes with tourism and fisheries and some of those issues as well. So our concern about mining in terms of freshwater coastal ecosystems comes down to the fact that when you reduce flow into estuaries, you fundamentally alter the health and the function of those estuaries. And this is pretty basic stuff, so I don't want to belabor this, but, you know, somebody once said that if the Earth came with an instruction manual, the first thing it would say was, don't touch the knobs. And we're doing a lot of knob turning right now, and I don't think it's for the better. So if you were going to design a perfect, highly functional, acre for acre, most probably ecologically functional or most vibrant ecosystem on the planet, you would design the perfect Florida coastal estuary, where you had the exact right balance of clean, fresh water coming in from the coast, the exact right balance of healthy salt water coming in and mixing. And that transition zone, that place where the two meet, is one of, if not the most, ecologically productive places on the planet. Whether it's coastal wetlands or mangrove forests or open water coastal estuaries, that's the game in the Gulf of Mexico right there. If those places go, so goes the Gulf of Mexico. So when you're talking about reducing freshwater flows, you're talking about upsetting that balance. And even more importantly, if you're replacing that freshwater flow with water that has contaminants or pollution or higher turbidity, you sort of a double win, where you have less water going in, and the water that is going in is of lower quality, and that fundamentally changes the system. I think this also, you know, kind of speaks to changing the hydrologic cycle in Florida, which is a pretty daunting thing to think that as people we've evolved to a point where we have the technology and the profit motive in some cases to change systems that have evolved over thousands of years. Just for a second, if you strip away the sort of the regulatory and the legal issues, you know, there's a deeper ethical issue. Is it right to destroy a creek or a river? I mean, I've heard folks from the industry say, and I'm not sure if they would, you know, say this now, this was a couple years ago, that they could basically put Horse Creek back better than the way it was. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, and I won't get into the sort of the other issues there theologically, but, you know, Horse Creek designed under a set of circumstances that are beyond our control or beyond our right to influence in many ways, and surely ethically, it raises some issues about taking something out of a natural system and arguing you can put it back better than it was. But the other issue with our hydrologic, or with our coastal estuaries, is that, I have to use my hands to do this, so. Oh, okay, thanks. Okay, so this is good. I like to talk with my hands anyway, so. All right. And if I had my brilliant PowerPoint, things would be moving now, and you guys can see this. But here's one of the issues. There's that mixing zone, that transition where that fresh, clean water meets that healthy Gulf water, and you have that productive estuary. That zone can shift geographically, sort of out or in a little bit, depending on the time of year, depending on, you know, whether or not we have hurricanes, depending on a whole variety of things. So there is some natural variance and some natural component to that sort of healthy transition zone, that sweet spot, so to speak, in the estuary, moving a little bit geographically, and that's okay. But the problem is, while it's designed to shift a little bit this way and a little bit that way, and over time that does happen, if you move it too far in either direction by either having too much fresh water coming out, and say in a drought situation, or when you want to dewater property to do something, or you have not enough fresh water coming out, you may move it past the point where it's viable. And here's an example. One of the concerns, and this is mining, there's no way around it. One of the concerns about withdrawing more water from the St. Johns River for unbridled growth in Central Florida, water mining, not necessarily, you know, aggregate mining, but water mining, all intents and purposes. One concern is that when you shift that transition zone, you're going to shift it into a part of the river where there's a lot of seawalls, where there's not natural systems. So here's an example. You have this transition zone where juvenile shrimp have been for thousands of years, and they've been surrounded by estuaries or wetlands or seagrasses, whatever the case may be. All of a sudden, because you have less fresh water and salt water has moved in this way, you shift that transition zone up the river to where it's all seawalls. Now, you may still have some of that biological activity and some of that reproduction, but then that juvenile marine life doesn't have places to hide, doesn't have places to find cover. All of a sudden, it's straight seawalls back and forth. And the reason I bring that up is that more and more in Florida, we are moving those transition spots and estuaries away from where they've been for thousands of years in the correct natural system into places where they aren't able to have the productivity they once did. And the impact of that is this. If you're talking about almost any marine species in the Gulf, commercial or recreational fish, all types of other marine species, these estuaries are the critical point at which they are able to have the most productive ecological activity. And if we change that, and we change that in perpetuity, we're fundamentally altering those life cycles. And I think ethically that's an issue, environmentally that's an issue, and also economically that's an issue. The other problem is, and I mentioned this earlier, if that water that is coming in, if it's reduced both in flow and increased in pollution or turbidity, then you have the double whammy of some of the problems we've seen off the coast of Florida recently with red tides and algal blooms. So not only are our estuaries less productive because of less flow resulting from inland mining activities, but the increased pollution is like the, you know, again, the nail in the coffin, another one of those thousand cuts. And so much of what happens in the Gulf is place-based. There's some room for transition, but it is very, very place-based in terms of that activity. And reducing freshwater flows coming into those places and changing them and moving them has adverse impacts. So I wanted to talk about something else in that regard. And just for some from reference, this is from the USGS. This would have been a slide. You can pretend it was a bit. And it would have had a great guy standing out in the coastal marsh. It would have been a really, really good slide. Over 20% of the estuarine wetlands in the lower 48 states are located in Florida. If you look at a map of the Gulf of Mexico, and you look at the estuaries that are left in the Gulf of Mexico that are somewhat healthy and productive, many of them are in Florida. We're losing them in Louisiana very, very quickly. Now, there's an interesting phenomenon in Louisiana. As we lose them, there's a short spike in productivity. As all this organic material decays, and there's a lot of life around that decay process, but that process is starting to peak, and then it goes down. We're talking about, in the coastline of Florida, some of the last great estuaries in the Gulf of Mexico. It's somewhat true in Southwest Florida, with Charlotte Harbor and places like that. Where it's particularly true is places like Florida's Nature Coast. And you know, when you talk about that tarmac mine in Levy County and some of the threats from other mines in that part of the state, the Nature Coast is the longest uninterrupted coastal wetland left anywhere in the United States. The Big Bend Seagrasses Bed, the Big Bend Seagrass Aquatic Preserve, or the Big Bend Seagrass Beds just offshore, the most pristine, ecologically healthy seagrass beds left anywhere in the Gulf of Mexico. That's in our state. That's a resource that we have a responsibility over. That's a resource that feeds the entire Gulf of Mexico. To think about changing that or polluting that is completely unacceptable. The other issue that we find very concerning in that Nature Coast part of the state is more and more it's becoming the sacrifice zone for projects that may not be acceptable in other places. We have a new nuclear plant coming down the pipe up there. We have this tarmac mine coming down the pipe. We have huge new coastal developments. We have all kinds of things happening up there. And you know, just to make this point, these projects are bad enough anywhere in the state, but when you put them in the last frontier that Florida has, when you put them in the last great place where this sort of biological diversity exists at that size and scale, you know, what does that leave for future generations? How do we explain that from an ethical perspective to people four or five generations down the road that we had a chance to save Florida's last frontier and we didn't take it? One other quick thing I wanted to mention in that regard is that we hear quite a bit about the economic importance of this industry, and that's important, and I'm not going to, you know, I mean, if I worked in the industry, I might feel a little bit differently, but luckily I don't, so I work in an industry that revolves around and is dependent on healthy estuaries and healthy ecosystems, and there's a direct economic benefit to Florida from keeping our coastlines healthy and keeping fresh water coming into these systems and having valuable fisheries. In 2006, Florida generated 59,000 jobs and $6 billion in saltwater fishing. Freshwater fishing, $2.2 billion, 19,000 jobs. Total fishing in Florida, $8.1 billion, number one in the nation. And the boating industry in Florida alone in 2006 generated $18.4 billion and employed 220,000 people. Now that's in the, you know, hook and bullet, boats on the water, that's in that part of the economy and the industry. Just in wildlife viewing, just in keeping coastal systems there for birds, for people who enjoy wildlife, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission just put out a new report as of last week that says in 2006, 3.3 million Floridians viewed wildlife at or near their homes, 1.6 million Floridians and tourists traveled around Florida for the sole purpose of wildlife viewing. This generated $3 billion in economic activity for the state of Florida. There is money in this state to be made. There is money in the state being made as we speak, keeping the nature and the nature coast, keeping the wild and wild Florida, and keeping our coastal systems just like they are, or improving them and restoring them from what they are now to what they were historically. And this industry, the mining industry, poses a direct threat to that in many, many cases. This is not something that, you know, it's sort of just a random thought on my part. You can find a lot of great information out there on the web about the environmental and economic value of Florida's coastlines. Again, this is a great report that Sea Grant put out a couple years ago about that very issue. And just what I wanted to conclude on is something that we found as an organization that we're having more success with, and I want to encourage other folks to do. You would not believe the power that recreational fishing groups have in this state, the political power. If you've ever bumped heads with them over recreational fishing issues, whether it's manatees or whether it's issues of allocation in front of some of the federal agencies or state agencies that manage fisheries, you find out really, really quickly these guys are well-connected, and they have a lot of money, and they're very politically powerful. Charlie Crist is a recreational fisherman. Charlie Crist has a boat that he keeps in St. Petersburg. Charlie Crist goes out on a regular basis. We have been working very, very hard, particularly with our Nature Coast campaign, and again, I mentioned the tarmac mine up there and some of our other concerns, to do more outreach, to do more work with recreational and commercial fishermen. We were able, earlier this year, to stop one of the largest and worst development projects that's been proposed in that part of the state, in large part because we did a lot of outreach and worked very closely with commercial fishermen. Gulf Fishermen's Association is a commercial fishing interest group, and those guys have a lot of members and a lot of folks who are very dedicated, and they have been joining us in a lot of these campaigns. Earlier you saw a slide about Piney Point and the whole disaster of Piney Point. I won't belabor that, but I'm going to be honest with you. It was commercial fishermen, for the most part, who got that dumping moved farther offshore because they went to their member of Congress, Gus Bilirakis at that time, and they raised holy hell about the fact that they were going to dump this stuff just off Tampa Bay. And they see a connection between their livelihood and coastal pollution and reduced health of coastal estuaries. I raise this issue because one organization in particular, the Coastal Conservation Association, or CCA, now they only have about 10,000 members in Florida, but they have the ability to go to an FWC meeting and be very politically powerful. They have the ear of the governor on a lot of issues. So one thing that I just wanted to mention is that, you know, I'm guilty of this too. We spend a lot of time sometimes talking to ourselves. We spend a lot of time sometimes talking to folks who agree with us, and that's important, and I'm one of the worst offenders on that. But the longer I do this, and the more we try to save big sections of Florida's coast, the more I realize that we have opportunities with coastal chambers of commerce, with coastal interest groups, with recreational and commercial fishing groups, to make our case, to show them this information, and to get them to act. And at the end of the day, the most important thing we can do in that regard, and the most important thing we can do, is to make sure that we are, as a united amalgamation of groups from around the state, whether we're finding sand mines or aggregate mines or whatever the case may be, getting that consistent message to the governor that this is not acceptable and it should not be a part of Florida's future in the way it's being conducted right now. I wanted to end on one other thing. You guys, and I apologize for being late this morning. Part of my reason for being late was trying to get my laptop to work at the hotel room. That didn't work. But anyway, that's another story. Senate Bill 1506. You guys may have already talked about that a little bit today, and if you did, I'll make this quick. But there's legislation pending in the Capitol as we speak that would take the ability of local governments, reduce their ability or take their ability away to fight bad mining projects. It's not just mining projects. It's a lot of other issues as well. The issue of preemption is very hot in the legislature this year. You have Sarasota County passing a really good local fertilizer ordinance. Fertilizer industry doesn't want that spreading across the state. They run to Tallahassee and try to get a bill passed that would restrict or ban local governments from doing the same thing Sarasota County did. Local governments are fighting back in many cases against mining projects. Charlotte County is a good example over the years. Industry doesn't like that. Go to Tallahassee, get the legislature to pass a bill like Senate Bill 1506 that would restrict the ability of local governments to have a say in that decision-making process. Just so you guys know, Representative Paige Kriegel from right here, from Punta Gorda, is on the House version of that bill. Mike Bennett from Sarasota, many of you guys are probably from that area, is the Senate sponsor of that bill. I find it ironic, the two Republicans who talk about putting local control first and having smaller government and putting the power of the people, you know, first, would promote legislation that essentially takes the ability of local folks like yourselves through your local governments from stopping these projects. When Mike Bennett's asked about it, what he says is, well, listen, we need roads in Florida. We need roads and we need growth, and some local government should be able to say, we don't want a big aggregate mine in our community. Well, with all due respect to Senator Bennett, I'm not really sure we need some of the road projects that DOT would like us to have. And I'm not really sure that I'm comfortable just with state or federal regulators or decision makers making all those decisions. But I will say this. It's a testament to the fact that you guys, in many cases in communities across the state, are being effective, that the industry feels like they have to do this. One other point about that, and I think this is very interesting in terms of that tarmac mine in Levy County. You know, they got their butts handed to them in southeast Florida on some of the lake belt issues, and they're feeling the sting of that. So they decided, well, let's go to some other places where people are going to be less organized and more rural and not have the same money to fight us, and that's where we'll take these projects. I don't think that southwest Florida or the Nature Coast should be the sacrifice zone in Florida because we can't have effective growth management, or we won't have effective growth management, and we won't say no to projects that are not in our best interest. So, in conclusion, I just wanted to add that I want to urge everyone in this room, take these two things home with you. Number one, you know, everything I said about the impact of coastal estuaries is important. I'm sure you guys knew a lot of that already. There's a lot of that on the web. I'll email anyone my PowerPoint presentation with more facts and figures and maps. We can take care of that. But take this home. We've got to stop Senate Bill 1506. We've got to stop preemption of local government's ability to have a say in these things. We've got to put the power back in the hands of the people on a variety of issues. And Governor Crist has got to be called out and held accountable for the mining issues in Florida that are in play right now. Now, I say that not as a criticism of the governor. He's done some things on the environment that I'm very happy about. But he's been pretty quiet about water quality issues and pretty quiet about these type of issues. If he's a friend of fishermen and a friend of the coast, he's got to be opposed and concerned about some of these projects. We need to get him on the record one way or the other and make sure that we're on a regular basis holding him accountable for those decisions and the people he appoints. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Tom Warnicke. And this presentation is entitled South Florida Dredge and Fill Projects for Beach Dunes. They ignore the impacts of source material from inland mines. Tom is serves on the executive committee of the Palm Beach County chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation, which is a grassroots, nonprofit environmental organization that works to protect our oceans, waves, and beaches. And with the help of more than 50,000 paid members in the United States. Tom?
You may have to pull his presentation up. I don't think it's loaded.
Okay, I'm not sure. I don't know
Thank
how to
you.
Do that.
Yeah, this laptop has no screen image on it right now.